January 20th. It is finally above freezing today, almost 40, feeling balmy. First time in a couple of weeks, but it seems like forever in January time. First thing I noticed as I started my walk was how different the snow on the ground felt. First to my feet, soft, welcoming, step by step, quite secure, not slippy and harsh sounding, resisting my boots. And it was snowball sticky, irresistible to the hand, scooping. I have an assortment of tiny rituals that I repeat every winter, just to test myself as time passes, whether I'm still young enough to do them. One is with snowballs, on a day like this, each handful turning into a baseball-sized missile in seconds. My goal is to hit a nearby tree with it, like a pitcher trying to throw a strike. First two today found their marks. Poof, poof. Beautiful. So I stopped, not wanting to test fate or my aging arm too steeply. Last couple of years, I remembered my aim had not been so good, kind of wild, requiring multiple pitches. Maybe not enough to walk the tree I was aiming at, but not controlled enough to assure a strikeout. I could have tried for that third strike today, but I didn't. As you know, if you've read any of my work, I draw symbolic meaning from even the slightest twitches of the natural world as it speaks to me. I'm pretty sure I make most of it up, or maybe more accurately, I'm pretty sure most people who hear me talk this way, while they might find it charming, assume I'm reading way too much into the trivial accidents and coincidences of daily life. In any case, today I thought, with deep delight, last year and the year before, my aim was wild, with snowballs, sure, but with everything else too. No precision, no repeatability, just all over the place. Now it's not. I can see what's in front of me and hit it when I choose to. That may or may not be true, but two in a row is enough proof for me. Any more would be inviting doubt, which I don't need any more of than I already have. Next thing I noticed was that this snow on the ground, still about 6 inches of it, was not blinding in the sunlight, as it had been for the last couple of times I was here, wishing I had heeded my optometrist's advice to get transitions lenses to protect my eyes. At the time of my last exam, late fall, as the days were growing shorter and darker, all I wanted was to maximize the incoming light. Snow changes that dynamic quite a lot, especially when it's extremely cold. All those crystals glinting every which way on the surface like slivers on the eyes, way too much light, forcing me to squint, hold hand to forehead for shade, turn away from the glare. Today, the light was soft. The snow, creamy white. Some crystals still, but more like a car finished with pearl paint. The sparkle just right. The underlying color deep, like still water, inviting long, longing looks. As I turned the second dog leg down on my preferred daily path, I noticed that the only footprints past that point, aside from those of a deer, were mine from a couple of days ago. I knew that this portion of the path was less traveled, most walkers preferring at that juncture to head up the hill to the wide, almost road that runs past the picnic areas. Carol and I used to go that way. Now it makes me sad up there, so for the last 3 years I've mostly been going this way. I just didn't realize so few others did. I could see why. This path ends abruptly down a steep slope, often slippery with snow, ice, or mud, at the road, with no apparent connecting point on the other side. As I explained in this fall, to avoid walking up the road to the next connecting point, I started going down the pathless hill just over the guardrail right across the road. Over time, maybe 1,000 passages by now, I've created a very clear and distinct path there, one easy to see and navigate to the little stream down the hill, and then across the footbridge to the main path on the other side. This section of the path on both sides of the road is mine, in at least one more way than that. It is where, 9 months after Carol died, I was born. All of a sudden, my stopped clock starting to tick again to my astonishment, like a newborn plopping down in the middle of the woods, wondering what was up. If you are ever on that path, a couple of 100 yards past the dogleg turn, you will see a dead, barkless tree that has fallen from the left side of the path into a still-growing tree on the other side, a crotch of its branching trunk lodged into it high enough so you can still walk under it. About a month ago, on its opposite face, the one you can't see as you walk on this path, in pretty much the only direction for which the path is functional, I carved my name and my rebirth date, Paul, 11-17-15. If you keep walking, about 30 feet ahead, you will pass between two maples, both youngish, a foot or so in diameter, one on each side of the path, maybe 3 feet apart at their base. Their main surface roots have grown together across the path, forming a step, about 4 inches high and wide, worn a bit flat on the top from all the footsteps. I always think of them as married by this connection they share. They seem quite happy together, comfortable in one another's company, willing to endure the foot traffic over their shared route growing thicker and stronger year by year. Every time I pass between them, I need to decide whether to use the step, thereby gaining the stability those two trees share and proffer, or stride over it, thereby avoiding undue wear on their intimate connection. Right there, just past that step, is where I was born again. A flotilla of yellow leaves fluttering above me, those leaves that somehow seemed to climb back up onto the trees from the ground I saw them on the day before on one of the walks I describe in this fall. It is a magical spot to me. I spent a lot of time deciding how to mark my birthplace. The two maples are rough-barked and, of course, still alive, so I didn't want to scar them with my mark. The other trees in the neighborhood are small and off the path. I considered nailing up a small sign flamboyantly, but what I ended up doing seemed just right. The tree I carved is clearly dead and has been for a long time, so I'm not hurting it. It will likely slide all the way down and rot on the ground within a few years. And my mark is quiet, hard to find. As I said, you have to look back to that tree after you pass under it. An unlikely turn for the walkers who might come by here, and there are few. It's possible, I thought, that the only one who ever sees that mark will be me, pretty much any day I want to right now, of course, but also maybe someday down the road in the unlikely event I return to Pittsburgh for a visit. Today the path was still snow-covered, so I stepped on the roots for safekeeping. Headed down the slope, across the road, over the guardrail, and down my self-made path. As I headed up the hill to the other side of the road, I began to think about how other people react when I tell them stories like this. The natural world, as I said, so full of signs and figures for me, making all these little myths out of my life. It probably seems strange, or charming, or, well, whatever. I don't even know why I'm inclined that way myself. Maybe it has to do with my genes. I'm half Irish, my mother's side, all those sprites and leprechauns, just part of everyday life in that culture, and Slovenian on my father's side. I recall about 35 years ago seeing a show at the Carnegie Museum of Contemporary Slavic Folk Art. It's both surprising and amazing to me. A lot of little wood pieces carved into lumpy, nymph-like faces, some funny, some scary, these fairies and gnomes who haunt the beautiful forests there. Many of the visual works, drawings, and paintings had that same aspect, the trees and flowers given shrouded human expressions and forms. I had no idea till then that the Slavic cultures shared so much in common with the Irish in that regard. When I tell stories like this or report some of the more unusual dreams I've had, some people think it is all fake, that I just make this stuff up to, well, I have no idea to what. I know that because at least a few people have said directly to me after I narrate something of this sort, "That can't be true, is it? You just made that up, didn't you?" or some variation on that. More commonly, I get that askance look, obviously skeptical, just writing it all off to my overstimulated imagination. If you are one of them, all I can say is this. There are more things under my sun than are dreamt of in your philosophy. I'm so glad there are. Today, it was the snow under my sun that got me started down this path. And now, I'm already here, far enough away from your philosophy that I can forget it even exists. Other people go in the opposite direction, thinking I'm some kind of a guru or sage. I say over and over to them, if I am even remotely any of those things, and I am not, it would be a seer in the very practical sense that I just see what I see and then say what I see. It may not be exactly what you see or would say, but it is only different in superficial ways, not in kind or degree. I am, as I keep repeating, just a guy trying to get by. And these little things help me to do that. About a mile from my walk's end, the first time in a couple of weeks I've been able to tolerate the full 4 miles, I stopped several times just to look, listen. The first time it was beside a small beech tree, its dry brown leaves still rattling quietly in the breeze, like maracas with soft beads inside them. Most of the beeches, large and small, still retain a pretty good portion of their leaves. Crispy sear, but they are starting now to fall. I could see that from all the beech leaves on top of the snow now, scattered about with what seemed artistic precision, like handmade wallpaper, each leaf equidistant from the one surrounding it. I have no idea how this could happen in the chaos of winter in these woods. But the symmetry was mesmerizingly beautiful. The next time I stopped was at the bottom of a gully beside a small stream, free-flowing now after being locked beneath ice for a couple of weeks, water so clear, all the fresh snow melt, so pristine. Life is full of such stoppings and goings, or more accurately, maybe, of different kinds of goings, the ones on the surface, fast-moving, visible to all, and the ones under the ice, so hard to calibrate, though we know they continue, no matter how cold it gets. The last time I stopped was at the crest of a hill overlooking the whole forest on the other side of the road, acres of soft, ivory snow, bits of which I had just balled up and thrown. So easy on my eyes from this vantage point, with hundreds and hundreds of strong, tall trees throwing their shadows over it in clear, straight lines, striations of dark and light. Vast. Tranquil. Puzzling. That is what I saw.